Good afternoon. Glad I could come today. I wasn't sure I was going to be able to make it. My general counsel told me if we didn't have a budget this afternoon, I wasn't coming. So fortunately, cooler heads prevailed up on the Hill. Hopefully they'll prevail so we have a budget beyond Sunday, because we're all concerned about it. So I wanted to talk to you all today about joint information environment and intelligence community information technology environment. Those are very important projects to us in the Navy, specifically my organization, because we are the only service that has a blend of the two and the six. And so for us, we get to see where we find gaps, where we see opportunities, but it also helps us prepare for the future and how we're going to do for the warfighter. Next slide. So these are the four things I'm going to cover. One of the reasons why I have a hard stop today is the final decision we're going to make as a Department of Defense on what we're going to do with Joint Regional Security Stack, how we're going to move it out, and how we're going to do it with the budget, how we're going to resource this, because it's important. Next slide. This way? Right there?
Give it a shot.
Okay. All right. So how many of you do know what EyeSight is, what it is? Any of you working on any projects with some of the community agencies on it? So this, right now, EyeSight has been mainly focused on what we call the traditional intelligence community agencies. It's been mostly geared toward the CIA, NSA, DIA, NGA, NRO. However, as of 2 weeks ago, we have finally, as the service, has been afforded the opportunity to start moving out with embracing those capabilities that they're already using for the good of for the services. So the Navy has decided that we're going to embrace the basic overview, basic vision of EyeSight, and we're starting to move out by looking at things like the Enterprise Software License, which I'll get to. But we're concerned because for us, intelligence is important, not just ashore, but it's afloat. If anybody's ever been on a submarine or a carrier, you know that we compartment everything. Well, it's even further compartmented when you look at how we do intelligence. So we're concerned about how we're going to deliver these capabilities on ships, given the rooms that we have for IT and some of the other changes that we have going on, but ensuring that we get the capability to the warfighter timely and they can execute it timely. So the mission agility that EyeSight affords, we believe that's true. We also believe that the intelligence community has actually mastered some things that we haven't on the non-intelligence side. They're much more forward-thinking in some areas. They're able to put those solutions out there faster than we are. They don't have some of the acquisition challenges we have. And so with that, we get those benefits, and we're trying to push them down to the non-intelligence sector. But the principles for intelligence communities, EyeSight program, the cloud hosting, we've leveraged it. We like what the CIA has done with their new model, and we're waiting to see the results of it, because it may be something we look at in the Navy as well as we think DOD. The coupling of services, I think most of you know that the Navy, we have NGEN, and we did not migrate to the Defense Enterprise email. We are still debating what that's going to be, so we're going to look and see what DEE2O is. But for now, the Navy is at a place where everybody else in the department wanted to be, so we're already there. We're looking to the future, and we didn't want to go back. But we are 100% in support of what's going on. Getting data to the people anytime, that's important. The CNO, we had a meeting with him the other day. He talked about how we have to be able to deliver more precision information quicker. We need to get it out to some of our ships a little bit sooner. Sometimes we're having some lapses in transport, but we also rely on SATCOM. And that's a challenge we have, and we've got to do something about our SATCOM, both for the intelligence side and the non-intelligence side. And I find the fact that one of the principles, the improved efficiency and effectiveness, about 10 years ago, this was one of the mantras from the Bush administration, because we worked on it then too, was improved efficiency and effectiveness. But what we've added now is cybersecurity. We are really focused on what we're doing with security. We have not given it enough time and attention in the past, but we have to now. And that's a challenge we have, not just from the workforce, but how we build our capabilities. Next slide. So the goals of EyeSight, I think they're pretty clear. It's making sure that we have a solid foundation. The user is important. We're doing more with our users to ensure that we get those capabilities to them, but they're easier to use, they're understandable, and trying to embrace commercial solutions and technology. Everything we do is going to be from an enterprise perspective. We're not doing the silos and stovepipes anymore. The governance and oversight, I was telling them at the table, one of our biggest challenges is governance. It's like herding cats. Can't do it, can't get it done, everybody complains, and in a year of execution, it's probably the hardest thing we have to do. And then the strategic partnerships. For us, both on the intelligence side and the non-intelligence side, we have started to bring in the United States Coast Guard. Even though they fall under the Department of Homeland Security, they're our maritime partner. And it's important for us, specifically, particularly in the Pacific area, because they have a larger presence in the Pacific area than we realized until about a year ago. So we are working with them on opportunities so we can do things. We have some facilities in some places that we're looking at maybe we should co-locate. We're looking at doing things like leveraging their help desk in some areas. It might be beneficial to us, it might be beneficial to them. The data centers, our maritime operations centers, we run both intelligence and non-intelligence maritime operations centers. We want them to embrace that with us so we can help work together. The components of iSight are the same as they are basically in JIE, except they're labeled a little differently and they go about executing them differently. The cloud, we're all working towards some type of cloud solution. The desktop, I'll tell you in a minute, but we're making some major changes toward our desktop environment in the next 18 months. The AppSmall, ironically, the intelligence community is so far ahead of us on the AppSmall, we can't get there. We are just struggling to get there on the non-intelligence side. The reserves for us are what we call the guinea pig because they have actually come out with some new things they want to do. I will tell you they're probably going to be putting an RFP out on the street to help them build some apps for an AppSmall for the reserve community. We embrace it because we think they're going to be the wave of how we get to the future. And then the enterprise service management, another challenge for us in the Navy. When we talk data centers, when we talk about how we do our apps, we have 27 Echelon 2s, and I have roughly now we're down to 6,200 applications that we're still trying to reduce even smaller than that. Next slide. So this is what we call operational view of what we envision iSight to be for the Navy as a warfighter. It's definitely global. It's about delivering capability and intelligence information anywhere, anytime to the warfighter. Doesn't matter whether you're on a shore or you're on a ship or you're on a sub, we have to deliver that information. And this is where that maritime partnership with the Coast Guard and the Marine Corps becomes absolutely critical. As you know, the Marines, we provide them transport support through the amphibs. But we're working tighter with the Marines now than we ever have. We also work a lot closer with the Air Force now. We have a lot of capability that we share, but we're doing those things together. But it's all, at the end of the day, it's all about ensuring that we can get the warfighter the capability they need to do the mission they have to do, as well as delivering that capability within a reasonable budget, process. But for us, it's a shore and a float. We have 320, give or take, ships, give or take on any day. But we have the shore side. And the float side for us is the most challenging. Every ship is its own data center. And we have ships that we need to decommission that we can't. We're looking at now how do we do things like the Mercy and the Comfort, the two hospitals that we have. We're going to have to do a different model because those ships need to be replaced. That's a major overhaul. What are we going to do? And we're looking at, we need to do some intelligence with those ships because we're going to loan those out to some other nations for humanitarian purposes, but we want to still have the capability to bring them back home to take care of the military. So we've got challenges in the intelligence arena as well. Next slide. These are the services that iSight has been provided and how they've divvied up among the intelligence community agencies. As you notice, there's no services on here. We're not delivering or responsible for any of these capabilities. We're going to be the consumer of these capabilities. We may put our little mark on it, but for the most part, we're going to take whatever they've delivered and we're going to use it, customize it for our environments just on the tactical side, not for the shore side. God and embrace it. The enterprise software licensing agreements, we have struggled and we are struggling with this because we have an issue with the acquisition community. What we were doing on the non-intelligence side is not acceptable on the intelligence side, so we're working to resolve that now. We hope that Dr. Kendall will approve a solution within the next week so that it allows us to buy those software products sooner on the intelligence side. So unlike the intelligence community, which has spread this out across multiple agencies, we use DISA on the non-intelligence side. They are the basic service provider. Next slide. So this is how we characterize the maturity of iSight and where we are. Now that the services are able to embrace it and use the services that are offered, we expect that this trend line will go up even further. We have several capabilities we're going to start putting out for actual implementation on two carriers. We did have a setback this week with our Canes contract, so we're trying to figure out what the impact is going to be, but we want to continue to move forward within the budget parameters that we've been allowed. But this is all for us is critical because that compartmentation and ensuring that we have the people ready to do the work is critical. And if they don't have that work, we can't do the things that we need to do to take care of ISIS and ISIL and all the other threats. Next slide. So, as of the 1st of October, one of the things that we did, Vice Admiral Branch, with the CNO's permission, stood up a new echelon Navy TICOM called ID4. It's the Information Dominance TICOM, and they are responsible for ensuring both the non-SCI and the SCI worlds that we operate in from an IT perspective and from a cyber domain, they execute those missions. They do the man, the train, the equip, and for Fleet Cybercom, Office of Naval Intelligence, the MITOC guys, those guys will be doing the actual execution. That's our stakeholder. They are the ones that we're going to be leveraging. They are working now to start rationalizing the enterprise environment. We've been making trades with who's going to get what mission, who's going to get what people. So it's a work in progress because by October of next year, it has to be 100% in place. So we've realigned the organizations like you see up here. It's a little different, but we think it's going to work, and we hope that it's going to be successful in a relatively short time. Next slide. So JIE, everybody knows what JIE is. It's the big thing DoD's been working on for the last 3.5 years. And again, as I said today, the Joint Regional Security Stack decision is probably the most fundamental decision we're going to make that's going to drive how we get to those capabilities soonest. This is what we consider to be the non-SCI environment for both ashore and afloat for us, but all of our service partners. But it also is going to help us get that information sooner to people. We are looking at things such as, do we need to still continue using the NIPRNet? NAR this week, or I guess it was ISU, released some new documents relative to controlled unclassified information framework. The Navy is now looking at, maybe we shouldn't have a NIPRNet. Maybe we don't need it. Maybe we need to focus our time and energy on the CIPRNet. We spend a lot of money protecting information in an unclassified environment that, for the most part, we don't really care if it gets if somebody gets it or not. So we're reevaluating that. We're also looking at, from the CIPRNet perspective, how we do things more with Wi-Fi, where we've had a couple of vendors have come talk to us about embracing Wi-Fi in that arena. So we're about to look at, maybe we should do some pilots. Admiral Branch, with the CNO's permission, has decided that we can run as many pilots as we want for new capability because it's the only way we're going to be able to find out if it's going to work. So that's what we're doing. Next slide. So, Navy, for the big rocks, for JIE, we are in every one of these areas that they've identified. We stood up officially yesterday. We declared the Pacific Enterprise Operations Center is now officially acknowledged, and it's the DISAPAC, and we will be working with them to migrate some of our capability into that environment. Our data centers, as you know, we've been struggling with that. We went from 179, we're down to 140. We're behind in execution of it, and OMB's already let us know we're behind on it. So we have made several of our data centers, are migrating them into the NGEN contract to help us with our commercial goals, but we've also got two pilots underway with two commercial vendors, and as FedRAMP continues to approve new vendors, we're going to be moving more to those cloud hosting facilities. We are probably going to shift our in-state mix. We initially said we were going to have 9 commercial data centers. We think we're going to go to more. We have not taken some of our data centers we call special purpose and decided whether we're going to move those or not, but we're looking at if a commercial provider can take care of the MeTalk, and what they have is very large data, then we may move it to a commercial provider. Those are the things we're starting to address now. The enterprise services, for us, NGEN is our enterprise service. It delivers all 37 capabilities that the Defense Enterprise Email Solution does, but we're advancing it. Starting the end of this month, hopefully, or first part of next month, we will be starting to make the switch from BlackBerry to iOS. We are going to embrace Droid. We're going to give everybody the opportunity to have BlackBerry, iOS, or Droid. We have a lot of people that like the tactile keyboard. We have a lot of people that don't want to do this. So we're going to give you the option. We will have about 42,000 devices in the Navy to start, and then we're going to move to the next stage, which is instead of desktops, we're going to go to tablets. We hope to be in fiscal year 16 moving to the tablet environment, at least in the Pentagon, and then going out. We don't know which version. It may be multiple ones, but that's what we're also doing. As I said, the Joint Regional Security Stack, big decision is today. The Army has been the biggest driver on that. We embrace it, but we already have those capabilities in place. So one of the things that I will tell you we're going to do, we're going to leverage the Navy's capabilities in certain areas, and it will become the broader capability for all the services. So you may see that the Army has a region, say Norfolk, or I'd say Norfolk, maybe down in Leavenworth, but we may have Norfolk, San Diego, we already own, Fort Lewis, that's going to be the Army. The Air Force is going to pick up Asia. So we've split the baby up so that everybody has a piece, but that's how we're going to do it. For the networks, we have 58 what we call legacy networks still to go. 28 of those are the medical. We made a decision a couple of months ago that the medical was no longer going to have their own separate network environment. So we are about to collapse them into NGEN. That goes along with the new project they have for the health modernization, because when they deliver that new capability in 16, we have to be ready. And our network environment for medical is not ready. So we're working that. We're also getting ready to collapse all of our shipyard networks, which we have never had the ability to bring into our environment. We're bringing all the shipyards into the NGEN environment. We should have no legacy networks but two, basically, after that. And they are one's classified and one's not. And they just do special things. But everything else will be under the NGEN environment. That's also to enhance our cybersecurity presence. And identity and access management, we've completed the SIPR token rollout. We are now enabling that capability on our ships. So by next year, December, 100% of our ships will be SIPR token capable. We will be using that as the only way you can log on to the network for both NIPR and SIPR is your card, either CAT card or the SIPR token, but that's it. We're waiting for the next iteration of identity and access management from the department. Next slide. So this is how we consider ourselves aligned to JIE. NGEN and CANES are our enterprise networks. That's what it will be. We're collapsing OneNet as well, which is our overseas network. We're bringing it into the NGEN, and we're doing that. We're starting that now. The data centers, this is the mix we currently have decided. We're going to shift. We know we're going to shift it. You will see a shift to probably commercial NGEN, no NEDCs. We're probably going to get rid of the NEDCs at some point, with the exception of NOLA. That's the only one we cannot, by law, get rid of. The rest of them are up for grabs. We're also looking at help desk consolidation. We had the report out last week. We didn't know we had 158 help desks that did just tier 1 and 2 level work, so the departments decided we can collapse them. And we're going to shift them into 3 central locations in the CONUS. For the identity and access management, again, it's the public key infrastructure, the cryptologic logon, we're all there, we're moving out on it. Our biggest challenge on this is our applications. They're not ready to be enabled, so we will enable the network, but our applications are going to take a little longer. And from the enterprise services, we did make a shift here too. We initially had decided to go to DISA for a portal. We decided not to do that after we looked at the cost. We're going to a commercial provider. SPAWAR should be working on that soon and putting some RFPs out for how we're going to move that. The virtual data center, it's a new thing for us too. We're looking at what's the best way to do it and what type of information we can put in that. It's probably going to be a pilot for us for about 18 months before we make the final decision. And then the security. In addition to the joint regional security stack, the MPLS, the multi-protocol layer solution, is going to be part of this. We have a major challenge in our CONUS footprint with this because we have to upgrade all of our circuits and capabilities in every location we have an installation. The bill for that was much higher than we anticipated, and so we are going to, it's going to take us a little longer to get there. It was supposed to take us 48 months. It looks like it's going to take us 60 to get there, but we're going to do it, and if we can get some additional money, we hope, we will accelerate it to the left. Our goal is to accelerate anything we can to the left by asking for additional money or making some additional trades. They're going to be looking at maybe we make some wholesale kills of capability that we can do that for right now. Next slide. So everybody knows about NGEN, and as I said, we're getting ready to go out with the new devices. We've also stood up a mobility IPT. One of the things that we found is the fleet's been much more innovative than we have in some areas, so they are moving out with pilots on things such as inventory control. They want to do inventory control using mobility capability, so we're going to let them finish doing it, and we're going to bring it out probably to the shore as well, but we're going to make sure all of our ships can do inventory control using a mobile app with a mobile device. We want to embrace this with our morale and welfare, with our training, with the libraries that we provide our sailors, all of the things that people don't think about that we do now, where we have a lot of people managing it or a lot of stovepipe applications. We're going to make it mobile. So you can, we have a new app now with the CNO. It's just for his flag officers and SESs. And he sends us these blasts every day off his app to our personal devices and telling us whatever it is he's thinking about. If it continues to be successful, it's going to become open to all Navy personnel. So that was one of the first things we tried. He likes it. We use it. I don't know if all of us embrace it, but kind of not want to have the CNO pointing at you every day or something like that. The OneNet, again, we're migrating OneNet into NGEN. We've already started that action. Two of the FC partners here, Hewlett Packard and CSC, are working that. So you should see that changing. We are also making some changes in our European environment as a result of SecDef. We're going to be collapsing some facilities overseas. We have to grow ROTA, but we're also going to collapse over in the Italy environment. And the data center consolidation, they just cleared the protest that we had on a contract with GAO, so we should be moving out. We hope that we go faster. We have to close at least 75 facilities this year, or we'll probably take a mark from OMB if we don't, because we are really behind. And on the tactical side, depending on what comes out of the budget this year for Congress, if we don't get what we asked for with AD&S and Canes, we may be shifting right again because we are behind in those areas as well. We've had some protests. Canes had a protest this week. It was upheld by GAO, and so now they're trying to figure out what we're going to do. We don't know what the significant impact is. So we've got some other challenges, but we are still going to align to JIE in the way that we had planned all along. Next slide. So JRSS, we already have JRSS installed in our San Diego building. It's called the Hopper, and we're about to turn it on. When we go out to FCA West in February, we're all going to go out and see how this works and what it's been doing for us relative to security. We're going to install one in Norfolk, and we're going to install it in Bahrain. Those are going to be our key facilities we're taking. We are going to provide those capabilities to the other services. That's different. So we're going to be relinquishing some control, and other AORs, they're going to be relinquishing control to us and these AORs. But this is what the department has decided is going to be the single security architecture for us. We already know from what they've tested that we can eliminate circuits, we can provision more capability behind these stacks than we ever could, and the throughput is actually pretty good. So we're not finding problems with latency or anything of that nature. So we think this is a success. Getting there is going to be a little bit of a challenge, but the bill is pretty high. It's over $1 billion. So we're looking at how all the services are going to pay for this, how we bring the medical guys in, and it's not just Navy medical, it's all the medical, into this with all the timelines that we've been directed to accomplish. So today, it probably will come out in the paper on Tuesday, what the final decision is from DOD and how they're going to move out. DISA is the driver. DISA will be the one to execute this for us, and we'll be in the follow mode. We will actually complete our migrations to JRSS in fiscal year 18 based on the rate that we're going. The Army should finish by 16, and I think the Air Force will finish in 16 as well. We'll be the last ones, Navy and Marine Corps. Next slide. So some people have seen this before, but this is what we consider here's the world today, and this is the world we want to be. It's a hodgepodge. If you look at the as-is, Mike Rogers has a very difficult time looking into the networks to see what's going on, so he can't always predict when we're under attack or how we're going to reduce or eliminate that attack. It's just too many points. But when you go to the 2B and you see it's a much more streamlined picture, the points are easier. He can gain access. He can do his offensive and defensive, and we should be able to fight the enemy from the cyber perspective. If we don't reduce that domain, that presence, we're going to have a bigger challenge. Where we also have the challenge in the 2B is we don't have the workforce. Cybersecurity workforce for us is probably one of the number one things that we cannot address right now, mainly because we don't have a skill set, and we're trying to figure out how to train these people to do the work. And it's not just military, it's civilians. We rely on a contractor base to do this, but there's a portion of this work that has to be done by the government. And we've been looking at, we've done a baseline review. We are 22,000 civilians short. And on the military side, we think we're about 13,000 short in terms of the workforce skill set. So we're going to be looking for some training opportunities for people to help us get there. Our other concern is once we get them trained, you all take them back. And we can't, because we can't pay them enough. But that's the reality. But we are doing that. We are also dealing with the attrition of employees. A lot of people are about to retire. Right now, we are so backlogged on retirements, it's about 6 months. If you don't put your paperwork in for 6 months, you can't get out when you think. That's how bad it is, just within the Department of the Navy. It's even worse across the Department of Defense. Most people, like me, I'm in the old retirement system. I've got a few years left, but we're all going, and we have not properly planned for the succession. So don't know who's going to be doing these jobs in a few years, but we got a challenge there as well. So we're looking to address those issues as well. And cybersecurity workforce has different skill set, mainly because it's offensive, defensive, it's the network, it's looking at the cybersecurity, it's a compilation of things that we've been stovepiped on for years with our workforce. Next slide. So for us, here's the biggest challenge, is the divide between JIE, iSight, and what they call the Defense Intelligence Information Enterprise. So we're bridging two big organizations, or two big elephants, and then we have the defense intelligence aspect to look at. And that's where we are right now struggling with. What do we do under the DI2E environment? What are we doing under JIE, and what are we doing under iSight? From an application perspective, it's out of control. We have the intelligence community, true intelligence community applications. We use and embrace them. Then, within defense intelligence, we've built our own stovepipe applications that are just good for us. And then you have the DOD and the applications that cross both between intelligence and non-intelligence, but then there's some that we have to use in both environments regardless. There's a lot of duplication, we understand that, but trying to get rid of the duplication means some wholesale changes that, from a people and culture perspective, we're not there. People don't want to make the changes. what I call server. We have server huggers, we have application huggers, we have done it this way, never gonna change, don't need to make change, you don't understand. So everybody's special, nobody's got anything in common, and we know that's not to be the fact. But it's the way it is, and it's a hard way to run operation. That's why I say it's like herding cats, because I'm telling you, between the guys in Japan and the guys over in Bahrain and the guys here in the States, everybody's special. And everybody's got different missions you don't understand. That's what they tell us all the time. So we're looking for people to help us with bridging this gap. We need help with how do we do DI2E without impacting what we're supposed to do with EyeSight, without impacting what we're supposed to do with JIE, and bring it all together so that at the end of the day, the person that wears that uniform, it doesn't matter. They don't know the difference anyway. Only we do, mostly at the Pentagon. So how do we bridge that gap? And so we're looking for opportunities like that. And if any of you come to FCOS, we're going to have a couple of sessions at the Dawn IT conference, which are going to be open to the vendors, to talk about it, because we need some insight from you on where you can help us bridge that gap. Some of you have been to see me, talked about it. We're trying to point you in the directions to help with our acquisition arms to get those opportunities to us. But it's a challenge, and it's a challenge we're all embracing, but it's a challenge we got to do a lot sooner and at a less cost. Next slide. So these are these are the relationships we have in just the DI2E. Again, it's all the services, but one of the fundamental capabilities we have is DCGS. And that in itself is taking a different life depending on each service. And then if any of you know what BICES is, that's our coalition capability. We're trying to address that. So we've got all of these, again, disparate activities going on, and we're trying to bridge the gap so we can get there with our international partners but achieve our goals for the warfighter.